We are announcing today the result of the appointment and selection process for the new chiefs in the military, as we have come to the end of a cycle of terms involving Air Marshal Bruce Ferguson as Chief of Defence, Major General Matt Burai as Chief of Army, and John Hamilton as Chief of Air Force. It was the practice followed by this government for the last key round of appointments, going back 5 years, to put the appointment process in the hands of the State Services Commission and to undergo a professional recruitment process for the top positions in the Defence Force. Delighted to announce today that the new Chief of the New Zealand Defence Force will be Major General Jerry Matapurai. Major General Lou Gardner will become Chief of Army. Air Commodore Graham Lintott, who can't be with us today, will become Chief of Air Force. And Rear Admiral David Ledson, who is Chief of Navy, will have his term extended out to the 30th of April in 2009 to bring his term of appointment into line with the other senior roles, which also expire at that time. Each of these gentlemen has a very long career in the New Zealand Defence Force. Major General Matapurai, by my calculation, is a 34-year veteran. Rear Admiral Ledson, a 39-year veteran. Air Commodore Lintott, 33-year veteran in the Air Force. And Major General Lou Gardner has served for 35 years. I should say, and there will be many occasions to say this again, in the coming months leading up to the departure of the existing Chief of Defence and Service Chiefs, that we have very greatly appreciated the service of Air Marshal Ferguson and Air Vice Marshal John Hamilton for the very professional and good service that they have given the force over many years and in leadership positions over the past 5 years. I'd ask Phil Goff now to say a couple of words, and then if media have any questions they would like to direct to the new appointees today or now, you are free to do that before I continue with my normal weekly press conference. But obviously the new appointees are available for further interview and, with you at a later time by appointment as well. Phil.
Thank you very much, Helen, and can I say, ladies and gentlemen, how pleased I am with the selections that have been made for the positions of Chief of Defence Force, Chief of Army, Air Force and Navy. It's a little bit disturbing to me as a politician to know that the Chief of Defence Force is now younger than me, and also the Chief of Army, but that's, that may be a reflection on me rather than them. It is a rejuvenation. But I'm sure that each of those appointed and reappointed to the positions will carry on the excellent work that has been done. And I would like to join with Helen, Bruce in particular, thanking you for a first-rate job of Chief of Defence Force, and equally Air Vice Marshal John Hamilton, who will be stepping down as Chief of the Air Force. Jerry Matapurai, I've known for quite some time, and had the privilege of being with you, Jerry, when we went to the peace ceremony in Bougainville, which brings to mind that you were the commander of the truth monitoring group, both Truth and Truce, in Bougainville, and also had the opportunity to meet with you and work with you as the joint commander of the New Zealand forces in East Timor, Timor-Leste, between December 1999 and I think July 2001. I think now Lieutenant General Matapurai has shown his leadership in the field operationally, but also has a strong ability strategically and analytically. Shares with the Prime Minister a First Class Honours degree, Master's degree, and will make a very fine leader of our Defence Forces. Can I also welcome the reappointment of Rear Admiral David Ledson. David, your term has been extended through for another 2 years, and to thank you for the very fine performance as head of the Navy. If I can also mention Lou Gardner. Lou is now Chief of the Army. He has had a series of postings, including with the United Nations Operation Somalia. He's been Deputy Chief of General Staff. He's been Land Commander and most recently Commander of Joint Forces. So we have a very experienced team who faced very strong competition for appointments to these positions. I think that that strong competition bodes well for the strength of our personnel at the top level of our Defence Forces. So I'd certainly congratulate all of you gentlemen and to look forward to the first-rate service that I know that each of you will be giving to New Zealand. And once again, Bruce, thank you for a job very well done. Thank you. Thank you, Prime Minister.
Any questions to the new appointees?
Could we ask you, Mr. Bride, there's been tension between the three services over competition for resources, etc. Do you think that's going to be a challenge for you to take up that job?
Well, the real challenge for me is to come to terms with the confidence that has been put in me to name me as the next CDF. Now, the current CDF is already managing and leading the Defence Force. You know, it would be imprudent of me, I think, to speculate about what my challenges will be until the 1st of May.
What does this mean to you during this appointment?
The appointment? Think of all of the good things that can happen to you when you have a life that you've lived serving your country as a soldier, sailor or aviator or whatever field, and then you're put in charge of that sort of service. It's a huge honour. A huge privilege.
Has this always been your ambition, or when did you
come up with the idea? About 4 years ago, when I became the Chief of Army, then the possibility of becoming the Chief of Defence Force became a lot closer. And to be honest, this morning at about 11 o'clock, when I got a phone call.
Are you a bossy person by nature?
Some would say I am, Barry. Janine and the family would say I am. But then, similarly, I think there are a whole lot of people who would say that I'm not.
What sort of qualities do you believe you'll bring to the job?
I think I'll bring the quality of consistency, carrying through on commitments made, the values that we hold dear in the Army and the Defence Force generally in terms of professionalism, in terms of commitment to the task at hand, in terms of courage, in terms of comradeship, and teamwork is essential for us, and also integrity. The Minister's mispronunciation of the truce to truth. I'm very much keen to make sure that what we do is transparent. Well, I can talk about the Army, and the Army does not have recruitment problems. We in the Army are able to recruit the numbers that we need to recruit, and we're getting good quality people. I can talk about the Army. I know what the Army's doing. I have an idea of what the Defence Force is facing in terms of recruitment and retention, especially.
How difficult is it for you as an Army man to look at the issues facing the Air Force or the Navy?
Well, I think one of the real sorts of development things for me has been over the last probably 6 years as the Land Commander and recently as the Chief of Army, as the Chief of Army, as being involved in the leadership and the management of the Defence Force as a whole with Air Marshal Ferguson. And so, one gets to understand the whole setting, far more better, with greater fidelity, because everyone has a view, but the view needs to be accurate.
The public perception would be that we do a lot of peacekeeping now. Does that impinge on our ability to actually enter into combat?
Are you asking me?
No, I'm just asking you.
Well, I can volunteer an answer on that, and that is that, with respect, that our defence forces are trained to be combat ready. That is required for peacekeeping. It's also required for other security work that we do generally. So there is not a contradiction between being a peacekeeper and being trained to be combat ready. The two go hand in hand.
Well, I guess when you're developing, say, the motorised battalion, and if you have a lot of rotations overseas, that clearly has put a strain on actually getting that unit up and running.
Well, far from put it. Well, certainly there's been a training aspect to the takeover of the LAS. But in terms of putting a strain, to the contrary, the strain actually existed when we put people into places like Bosnia with the M113s that were Vietnam War era and were quite substandard in terms of the proper protection of the people that we had serving our country as peacekeepers abroad. Today, when they go into such zones where they have access to state-of-the-art equipment such as the Pinsgaus and the LAV-3s, we can be confident that they can do the job we expect of them, maximising the safety factors that is necessary for us to put our people into the field.
When you announced the state sector review the other day, one of the issues you were looking at was the sustainability of the 10-year funding track for the what were the issues? Do you have a problem?
Well, I don't have a problem. In fact, I have a great advantage that we have now a long-term development plan where there's $3.3 billion for capital expenditure and $4.6 billion for the Defence Sustainability Initiative. I'm coming to your answer, Vern. What we need to know when we make an investment of $7 to $8 billion is that each one of those dollars that we as taxpayers invest in the Defence Forces will be spent to the maximum effectiveness in delivering the results that we want. I'm very happy with the way the long-term development plan is going and the Defence Sustainability Initiative, but we need to ensure that the systems that we have in place are the very best that we can have in place for cost effectiveness. That's why that's part of the review, alongside, of course, a whole range of other government departments that are being covered by that review. How I've classified it in the past, I've said that operationally I think that our defence forces are the best in the world. In terms of management, I think that we're better than most, but I think that management and capacity building, financial management, those are areas that we need to look at to ensure that we're not simply better than most, but we are equally the best in the world at those particular functions.
I wonder if you could have been speaking as the current defence minister about the challenges of leaving your successor, and I wonder if I could specifically ask about that issue of trying to bring greater cooperation between the three forces, which has been identified in the past as an issue and which caused some sort of restructuring.
Yes, I think you fully realise the situation that existed before this present leadership team came into the positions. That has gone away. It went away very, very quickly. And I've been very, very lucky to have the team that I've had. There has been no difficulty in differentiating between the services, what's required. And in fact, I've been stunned in a very good way as to the cooperation that has existed between the three service chiefs, myself, and the Joint Commander. This simply, in 4 years, has not been a significant problem.
In the former meetings over procurement, and what to procure by way of equipment now resolved as far as you're concerned?
They're absolutely resolved as far as I'm concerned. It's not only the team, it's the long-term development plan the Minister was talking about, which set in place a government-funded, agreed programme. That was after the process of the service chiefs and myself getting together and determining the priorities.
Are you saying that they are also resolved across the forces?
The equipment, well, we've got a
Recruitment and retention officer.
Well, recruitment and retention is always, both of those are always going to be a challenge for any free nation's forces. It ebbs and flows with respect to the economic situation. When there's a high economy, there is very hard to recruit. If it goes on the other hand, the Defence Force is quite like that because actually more people are looking at joining up. There's always challenges, but what I'm very pleased to see over the last 12 months is a trending down of attrition. It's quite markedly trending down. And I just reiterate what Jerry said, that we're basically, there is no problem. It continues to be a challenge. But we're going to be very, very close to the target set to us by government for this next year.
If I can just sneak in one more, there are stresses and strains in terms of the range and number of appointments we have. Is that still uppermost in your minds, that the forces are overall very stretched?
I don't recommend anything to the government that I know we're not capable of doing. Everything that is going on at the moment has come with my recommendation to the government. I've made that balanced decision after talking to the service chiefs to see what we can do. Of course there's going to be problems, but they are not insurmountable. But the challenges of and the rewards of putting our people in these positions of peacekeeping, United Nations observing positions, etc., the ones we have overseas, the rewards for that is we get back young men and women who are infinitely better prepared for the future, for the defence forces. So it's a give and take, but I am very comfortable with the situation we're in, and being overstretched is wrong. I would not recommend to the government anything that overstretches the defence force. Be very clear on that.
Can I just ask Lieutenant General Manapurai, what does
Major
this
Major General still...
Soon to be left in.
What significance is this for Moradin? You're the first Maori Chief of Defence Force.
I am. You will need to go and speak to Maori. I have a view. I'm immensely proud as a New Zealander to serve. I'm also immensely proud as a member of the Ngāti Tūwharetoa to be selected. That's a question for others to answer.
Well, you'll be seen as something of a role model, I would imagine, for Maori. There's a lot of Maori in the armed forces. It shows that they can get to the top, I guess.
And that's always been the case. I look out, and when I look out, it's a matter of how I perform doing my doing my job that warrants whether I'm promoted. So it's a meritocracy. The Defence Force, the whole Defence Force, is that way inclined.
This is nothing new, Barry. Gerry has been a role model for his entire career. He's now about to reach the apex of a military career. He'll continue to be a role model, and I have total confidence he'll be fully accepted by not only all Maori but all New Zealand. He's an excellent future leader.
What I appreciated most when I was in Waiuru 2 weeks ago was a speech of welcome by Gerry that drew on the two traditions, the tradition of the Maori warrior and the traditions of the British Army. And I think that Gerry has melded those two traditions together to produce the sort of leadership that he's shown himself capable of.
Thank you very much. Thank you.